there is, you know, incredible academic preparation happening here, incredible spiritual preparation and maturation and growth happening here.
My success stories have really just been one after another. They're successful to me because I love to see people's lives change.
It was a remarkable experience.
Hello and welcome to Latter-day Profiles. I'm Brian Howard. We're here on the campus of Brigham Young University, Idaho, and joining me today is Mark Kohler. Mark, welcome.
Thanks for having me. What an honor.
Mark, it's great to have you. Mark is a lawyer. He's a partner at a law firm, partner in also a CPA firm, an author, does podcasts, radio, blogs, you name it, YouTube. You'll find him just about everywhere. And, you know, got a variety of books out there. It's just good to have you. You know, I started doing research. It's like, Mark, you're everywhere.
Well, if you're doing small business or trying to save taxes, maybe I'm everywhere. But thank you for saying that. It's an honor.
Well, it's good to have you here in Rexburg, of all places, doing all those things. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your background. Mark, where you're from, and let's talk about your career path. Where'd you grow up at?
Well, Eastern Washington. So I love the Northwest, born in Oregon. I came out here to Ricks back in the day, met my beautiful wife, Jennifer, and fell in love with Rexburg. And so as we then traveled around the country and finishing school and building our firms and things, I always wanted to come back. The small town mojo, I just need that vibe in my life. It's too crazy in Southern California and other places. So we ended up back here about 4 years ago.
Good to have you. What got you interested in law? Was it something at an early age, or when did you come across the idea that I want to go into that?
Well, good question. In high school, I had a government teacher that I really liked, probably the class I related to the most, and a little bit of math because I had that accounting piece in me, and then went off to University of Utah. Can I say that on the show?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that okay?
We'll still
right.
accept you. It's good.
And got my accounting degree because I really felt that the numbers was the lifeblood of business. If you can understand a financial statement and a tax return, you're going to be a lot more valuable at the table. And then lo and behold, I have a tax lawyer as a teacher. And so when I saw you can be a lawyer and an accountant, and that match made in heaven, I thought, that's what I want to do. So I had some friends going to law school, and my brother was going to law school, and so I said, I'll tag along. And then I just loved it.
So you're married, you went to Rick, so you're going to law school, you're married. What was that experience like? Because that's, I understand law school is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, well, you get a different answer if you ask my wife. She was a trooper. We had three kids under three.
Oh, wow.
While going to law school. So we had twins. And so she was amazing. She held the family together. And you're right, it is a lot of work. But it's a neat experience to be so immersed in education where they don't even want you to have a job and you're just hyper-focused on the law, and you learn so much about the government and the United States and why we're here. And then that's when I, of course, started to develop my concept of the American dream and how I really wanted to focus on small business. Mm-hmm. And so it was great. We went in Oregon to law school. So being in the Northwest, you know, Oregon and Washington, I'm a believer, you know, in Bigfoot. So if you've seen the documentary, Harry and the Hendersons, that's a good documentary. You know, you'll be a believer too. So
that's right. You're very true to life, just what goes on up there, you know, in the woods. So once you graduate, obviously, you know, that's the challenge. I think most people who go to law school either want, you know, something like a partner in a firm or something like that. That's kind of the goal. What was your path? How did you end up getting to where you are now?
Well, it sounds exciting because I went on an LDS mission to New York City. Hmm. So being in New York in the late 80s, I know I look like a millennial, but it was in the 80s. And so I was kind of that Wall Street image mesmerizes you. And then you go to law school and you think big city. But real quick, I realized, again, growing up in a small town in Washington on a farm, I wanted to be a small business type of specialist. Tax lawyers that work with small business owners are fairly rare because they all get sucked up into the big cities, right, and doing mergers and acquisitions and international law and all that. And that was an opportunity, but my wife and I are like, no, let's stick with the small business thing. So we went to Southern Utah for a number of years, and being a tax lawyer, I think I helped every business owner in the first 6 months. And then I had to realize, if I'm going to do this, I better expand. Yeah. But it was a huge blessing, and the way media, of the advancement in media in the 90s and early 2000s, where YouTube came alive, social media started to happen. And so I was able to start teaching my concepts to other small towns around the country without having to live there.
Yeah.
And so that allowed me to specialize in the small business.
Well, you've expanded quite a bit. I mean, you've got offices in Cedar City here in Rexburg. Also, are you in Arizona? Where else are your offices?
We have offices in Phoenix and then in Southern California. So we moved to Southern California a while, lived near the happiest place on earth, Disneyland.
Of course. You know.
And then we got that out of our system, and we go back to visit a lot, but it's tough. It's a rat race. And so that's where we moved from recently to come to Southern Idaho. So with these offices in the Western states, we still help clients all over the country. Mm. And that's the beauty now too. You as a business owner can say, who do I need to work with? And it doesn't have to be someone down the street. Yeah, you can work with someone in Florida if you have to, and if they know what you're doing.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Why did you decide, you know, the real focus on the small business owner? Was that obviously the conscious decision, just the kind of people you like to work with, you wanted to help them out? What was the conscious decision behind that?
I like the way you said that. They are people I like to work with. When you start working with big corporations, they're great people, but that's not their business. It's they're working in this huge machine, and money is so you're so detached from these huge humongous corporations. Am I really helping people, or am I just helping this machine? And so yes, some of my books are a little, you know, not conspiracy theories, but I'm a little anti-Wall Street. I love Main Street America. And so you hear that more and more.
Yeah.
Main Street versus Wall Street. Hillary Clinton talked a lot about that, even Donald Trump. And so from a political standpoint, there is this battle. And so I chose sides. So I chose Main Street. And I love the small business owner. Because when you're meeting with someone and you're helping them save money on their taxes, or how do I build my business, you're making an impact in someone's life right there. And so it's very emotional. Oftentimes it's exciting. It's very rewarding. And we've been able to work on volume where we don't have to charge as much as a big city law firm, but we can get more people through and still make our business model profitable and help more people. So,
well, you've been doing this pretty long. You probably have some good stories where you've worked with people and things have turned out well. I mean, what are you, and share anything like that where you have people that you've worked with, it's like, oh, a small business owner, now they've had success stories.
Yeah, well, right now, after this COVID pandemic, before COVID, there was a lot of surveys that were wrapping up in 2018 and 19, where it was estimated 1 out of 3 working Americans had a side hustle. Mm. 1 in 3 have a small business. I bet if we went around the studio in here and said, who's driving Uber? Who's selling on Craigslist? Who's doing something on eBay or a little consulting or a little lawn care or auto detailing? A lot of people are having to make ends meet with a side hustle. That's an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
That's a small business. Man, I'm ready to talk. And so there are so many people when that light goes off that, hey, I have a rental property. That's a small business. Yes. Mm. Okay. So now a whole world opens up of tax strategies and asset protection and wealth building and passing on a legacy and teaching your family about money. So many families don't talk about money at the dinner table and entrepreneurship. So my success stories have really just been one after another. They're successful to me because I love to see people's lives change, but seeing them say, hey, I've got this side hustle and I didn't have to quit my day job, but I'm making some more money. I'm putting away a little bit more for retirement. I'm creating more cash flow, I'm paying off debt, and it's just awesome.
I'm wondering, tie this into your books. I want to talk about how you became an author, but I'm assuming that a lot of us do the side hustle thing. We're probably pretty clueless about all the advantages we could get of having a small business. You know, we sell something or do something like that and think, I made a few bucks. Are we missing out? Are we missing the boat? We should be really be paying more attention to what we're doing.
Man, you weren't paid to ask me that question either. I want to point that out because yes, you are. Some people are missing the boat because from a tax standpoint, let's just talk taxes. Sure. I'll hit 2 or 3 points real fast. First, taxes. Well, with a W-2 wage earner, you get your W-2, I maybe write off some home interest, some charity, but even with the new increased standard deduction, millions of Americans aren't even itemizing anymore.
Sure.
So there's nothing to do. And I can't save you any money. Oh, but you have a small business. Let's think of a rental property. Now I can write off cell phone, home office, auto, travel, dining, equipment, computers, laptops, all these things that I need to run my rental that I'm going to buy anyway, but now they have a justifiable business expense. So I call them personal conversion expenses. Now, I know we talk about on the show personal conversion all the time, but I'm talking about personal conversion expenses. I'm going to convert a personal expense to now a business expense. So now I can make more money, take write-offs for stuff I was going to pay for anyway, and pay a lower marginal tax rate because I'm making more money, but paying less taxes, that's a win.
Yeah.
Number two, a rental property can create cash flow. Now, by the way, I'm not selling rental property. I'm just using that example. I could be selling stuff on eBay or doing a little consulting business on the side. I'm going to increase my cash flow in my life. Number three, I might increase more equity or wealth. Mm-hmm. Because if I can build some equity in a property or a small business, now I have something more to fall back on. And number four, that travel opportunity. Whenever I travel, I want to travel for business. Why am I not buying rentals where my kids live, where grandma lives? Why am I not doing business when I travel? Now I get a write-off for that. And I'm creating more wealth as part of my lifestyle. And I'm teaching my family about it. I'm getting my kids or my parents involved as employees or board of directors. And it becomes a family affair. It's a lifestyle. Are you sold yet? Did I get you excited? I mean, I don't know.
That sounds great. You know, I think for a lot of folks, I'm assuming, and I've had these conversations, probably scares a lot of people to death. It's like, oh, well, man, how do I even start that? Because it sounds like you start like write-offs and this, like, oh, I'm scared. I don't know if I can do that.
Well, it's funny you say that because a lot of people are like, oh, it's too risky to start a small business. I say it's too risky not to. Mm. Seriously, look, could you ever imagine a worldwide pandemic where you might lose your job? You know, if I would have said that a year and a half ago, everybody would have been like, it's crazy. What's he smoking? You know, but seriously, the millions of Americans where their jobs were eliminated, they were laid off, they were moved home, they got reduced pay, unemployment. And what if they would have had a small business to fall back on? Why aren't we having small business as our safety net? So it doesn't have to be where you're investing thousands of dollars or getting an SBA loan. There's so many small businesses you can start for little or no money and start selling a service or a product or figuring things out. You don't have to invent something and have it made in China and shipped in on a cargo container. You can do all sorts of little businesses. And I love talking to students on campus about a small business. Graduating was a small business. I got excited about small business. I think you asked that earlier because I was a kid that always had the lemonade stand.
Yeah.
You know, and when I was in college, I had probably three different businesses. And I felt that prepared me more for life than the just solely focused on classes. I think the combination is where you really find that benefit.
That nice spot right in the middle.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got lots of great information. Is this when you decide, when did you decide to start writing books? I wrote down some of the titles in here. You've got one of my favorites, Lawyers Are Liars, The Truth About Protecting Our Assets. I love that one. But your CPA isn't telling you, the Tax and Legal Playbook. And you got four or five others, I think. You've got lots of them out there. What motivated you to start putting, I guess, pen to paper, writing these books?
Well, when you try to spread the good word of the American dream, you want to use different mediums or methods. So a book creates a lot of credibility because you're putting your money where your mouth is. Mm-hmm. You're going to stand behind what you're saying. You're going to write it down. And that's a big deal. You know, it's very intimidating to say, okay, do I really believe this? Or people are going to read this. I better be able to back it up. So that's good to go through that process. And the book puts you on the map of Amazon and out there in the world. And then more people read it. But it's only one method of or a medium. Immediately when you start writing a book, you start writing blog articles. Mm. I like to talk about how to write a book. Just start writing articles. The articles become the chapters of your book.
Yeah.
So you start writing blog articles. You start a book. You start doing a podcast. So many people are now listening to audiobooks even more than the paper. Is that real paper you're holding?
Actually,
I can't believe you're not
paper.
On an
Can
iPad.
You believe that? Yeah.
It's paper. Old school.
Very
you
old
wouldn't
school.
Catch any of these guys with a paper. They're like, what is that?
Yeah.
But then we start podcasting. YouTube has been huge for us. YouTube is searched more daily than Google.
Yeah.
So if you want to know how to do something, you ask these young people in here again. If no one knows this, we're the old guys on the set. You know, they know how to run all this equipment. But YouTube's where it's at. And so all the book's a part of that. And, you know, it's fun to write. You kind of dream of holing up in a cabin, you know, eating chili, writing a book. You disappear, and then you come back with this work of art.
Yeah,
you try.
Yeah, it doesn't really work that way, does it? Well, the book, the podcast, and the YouTube channel has gotten you noticed by national media. You've been asked to be a guest on lots of the shows, the business networks, Fox and MSNBC and such.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Do you remember the first time that happened? That was probably kind of an interesting affair.
Yeah, well, spoiler alert, the news stations don't usually call you up to say, hey, will you come on our show? You have to start kind of making a name for yourself and beating down that door. I'm sure people call up Dave Ramsey now and go, will you be on our show? But it didn't start out like that.
Right.
That was 20 years ago. He was trying to build his brand as well. So you have to go out looking for that. And so we did. I started to just send my book around to producers and let people know, hey, if you're looking for an interview. Now, you were probably skeptical. Are we really going to interview an accountant on this show? He's telling his team, I'm sure, are we going to blow the show? No one's going to watch this. But as you can see, I try to be a little bit of a character and make things fun. And so when the producer, you have to kind of earn your keep in media by doing the smaller shows. So you do like the smaller markets.
Like local TV station.
Your local TV. Then you get picked up by the bigger, and then all of a sudden New York calls and goes, okay, you can be on our show. And I haven't been on the Today Show or GMA yet, but someday. So you have to go on the show, and then they realize, hey, this guy can make accounting sound interesting or legal, small business, and he's easy to understand. Let's have that guy back. And so that's where I've tried to build my unique characteristic is I could be on a panel on CNN with three or four other really, really smart people. But I'll be the one you remember that you understood.
That's important.
And that's my trying to be my claim to fame. I mean, I try to be smart, but there's a lot more people smarter than me, but I can help the average person understand it maybe a little bit better.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Make it interesting, help us understand it. That gets us changing the channel faster than anything. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right? Yeah.
Well, you're here in Rexburg, and you've had opportunity. You're actually serving on campus, right, in a bishopric. Tell us about that. What do you think about that?
I love it. It's my most favorite calling ever. Scouting used to be my favorite calling until that's been decimated, right?
Yeah, right.
So, and I just love scouting for years. Now all my little scouts have turned into college students. So it's kind of worked out for me. And that's actually happened where I've had that experience. But I love being on campus, and the college students are great. And so I get a chance to not only be a spiritual mentor, but to talk about business again and talk about this kind of stuff, and students eat it up. It's shocking. I was in a class, it was a fireside or a class, and I'm talking to so many students, I can't keep it straight, but I said, how many of you know what a Roth IRA is? 50 students there. Two raised their hand. How many of you know what a DBA is? And three people raised their hand. DBA being a doing business as, like starting a sole proprietor. Three kids. I said, how many of you have your own small business right now? This was seniors, senior level class. I once asked that. Two kids raised their hands. And I'm like, do you know how marketable you'll be if you have a little small business and you go into an interview and they've got two students. One was straight A's, the other one was straight B's and A's, but one's had a small business, had payroll, hired and fired people, had to go out and make sales and knock on doors. Who do you think they're going to hire? It's not always grades. It's creating that diverse personality and the strength not to get off your phone and look someone and go, hey, do you want to buy what I'm selling? Tough.
I've been thinking a calling I had a few years ago was with self-reliance, and it seems to be a message the church is really trying to send. You got to be self-reliant. One of those things is starting a small business, which was really popular. I had fun attending that class because people had a lot of great ideas. I think perhaps we don't look at it that way, but self-reliance could be running and starting your own business.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just food storage or getting out of debt or a savings account. All of those play in together. And it really is. It's because think about it, in life, it's not always one thing. Right. It's a balance. It's a bunch of little things. There are four or five legs under this table or whatever. And so having a small business, again, something to fall back on and creating a little extra income, the resources of that business can then fund the debt payoff faster, pay down the house faster, fund my Roth or my 401k faster. And so that money conversation, I guess, to be honest, is a big one. Because again, like I said earlier, a lot of families, not that they're bad parents or bad family, but their parents didn't talk about money either.
Sure.
And they can villainize money. Rich people are bad. Right. Or making money means you're off kilter or whatever. And there's so many scriptural references. I love to teach a fireside and say, money's not bad. Render unto Caesar what is his. Pray over your fields and your flocks. Get out of debt. Don't be a slave. I mean, there's just scripture after scripture that talk about good money management. And tithing is not a blank check to be irresponsible financially.
Right.
Oh, I pay my tithing, so I don't need a budget. No, the tithing is supposed to help you be better financially. So I think the church has really embraced this, and the self-reliance classes are awesome. They're so good. And I just dated myself. I said awesome, didn't I? I shouldn't have said that. I don't know what to say anymore.
It's okay. They won't laugh inside the room yet. Yeah, I just think we just got a minute or two left. But, you know, you ended up at Rick's, you did a mission. All these things, I'm sure, shaped your perspective on your direction, especially, I think, you know, a lot of times when people go into business, they're a little worried about being a good person, have high ethics and that kind of thing going into business. How has that, you know, kind of shaped your life and the direction, especially the kind of thing you want to do, helping the small business owner?
Well, I didn't expect you to ask that. That's a great question. It is a little scary out there. You see, there's cultures that literally believe that if I can swindle you in this business deal, it's your fault. Mm. Not mine. You let your guard down. That's your fault. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's really scary. There's other people that say, well, I go to church or I help my family, but when I'm in business, it's business, you know, and whatever I can do to eke out a dollar or whatever. I think that's really sad. We want to make sure that we're consistent with all of our values and what we believe in and how we treat people. And treating our employees and our vendors and the people we work with respect, and making sure they win in the transaction. If you're always trying to be so cheap, and this happens in small towns all over America, Idaho or Utah, it's like, I got to get a deal. Well, what about the guy or gal on the other side of the transaction? You know, make it a win-win. It's okay to pay someone and they can make a profit. And then you're gonna turn around and sell what you do and make a profit too. And that's okay. Be honest, be fair. Make transactions mutually beneficial and be honest. It's easy to say, but it just needs to be said more often.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good thought. You know, the person you're buying from or selling to has got the same problems as you do, and they need to buy and sell and make a profit as well.
Yeah.
Mark, what's the future for you? You know, continue on podcasting. By the way, name of the podcast, Main Street Business Podcast, correct?
Yes, Main Street Business. You just Google that. We have the Directed IRA podcast. We actually have two of them. We love helping people self-direct their retirement accounts. A lot of people are fed up with what's in Wall Street, so we want people to take their retirement accounts, their Coverdales, their SEPs, their IRAs, Roths, and invest them in what they know best. Mm. Could be real estate or notes or gold or cryptocurrency, all sorts of things. So we love that. So we have a couple podcasts. You can get to my website, markjkohler.com, sign up for things. The future, I don't know. I'm going to start doing drywall, hair and nails, driving truck. No, I'm just joking. I get so busy. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. So if you're following me on my website or on my social media, I've got so many great employees and partners in our law firm, and accounting firm, and trust company that will be there for you, help you live your dream, wherever it is. Let's get there.
Mark, appreciate it. If you're looking again, check him out. You can Google Mark Kohler. He's going to show up on the podcast on YouTube, lots of different places. Got books out there that give you some great information. So, Mark, appreciate you coming. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Start your business. Let's get it
right,
going.
All right. You can come visit. Get it going.